This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Weeks of chaos and violence in Haiti may be coming to an end, as an agreement for a transitional government is drawn up this week. Haiti's political parties and numerous stakeholding civil society groups have coalesced around a 9-member council that will remain in power for 22 months before elections can be held for a new president. About a month ago, Haitian President Ariel Henry announced his resignation after pressure from the United States. He had been in Kenya on the verge of authorizing 1,000 Kenyan forces to deploy to Haiti to tackle the political violence. Mr. Henry had taken over the presidency from Jovenel Moïse, who was assassinated in 2021. Many Haitians are desperate to flee the violence but face hostile American politicians, such as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has deployed National Guardsmen to the southern part of his state. We turn now to Jocelyn McCalla, Senior Policy Advisor to the Haitian American Foundation for Democracy. He was previously the Executive Director of the National Coalition for Haitian Rights. Welcome to the program, Jocelyn.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So first, let's talk about what is happening currently in Haiti as of this week. We're hearing reports that there is a council that was formed to basically transition the country into an election in 22 months, a council of nine with stakeholders and political parties. What are you seeing happening, and how do you explain this transition? Is it actually something that could work?
Well, hopefully it is a formula that will work. It's the first time that this is being tried in Haiti, and that is because, to a certain extent, the schemes that have been used before have not been as productive. So here is the situation here. About 3 years ago, when de facto president of Haiti, Mr. Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated by a bunch of mercenaries, and basically was an eclectic group of people, which included Colombian mercenaries, DEA informants, as well as aspiring presidential contenders in Haiti, and businessmen who wanted to sort of profit from the event. A new prime minister was inaugurated, sworn in, thanks to support from the international community. But he basically overstayed his welcome. His job was to organize election in 3 months or less, but he's been there for about 3 years since.
You're talking about Ariel Henry.
That's correct. I mean, Mr. Henry basically overstayed his welcome. Failed to manage successfully what he called a transition to a democratic government that would be sworn in by or would be brought in by democratic elections. And now the situation has gotten so worse that the paramilitary groups that he relied on to suppress opposition have come into their own and have essentially, force things to certain to the extent that he is now out of the country. He can't go back to Haiti at this stage, and the political parties that have been lobbying for a change for quite a while are now coming up with a transitional scheme that has unfortunately taken a lot of time to sort of come together. But perhaps it was a necessary time for them to come together and essentially conclude an agreement among themselves that they, which is, you could at best say it was a non-compete agreement, because most of the people who are going to be named to the commission are essentially people who agreed not to run for office in democratic elections afterwards. And most of the people who are going to be part of the next transitional government that have to also agree that they're not going to be running for office or using their time in office during the next 2 years or so, so that they can consolidate their power. So that's something new in Haitian politics, and this is why, and I think it should be welcome. I think that this week there will be an official executive order that will be released and printed in the government's official gazette, which will essentially say these are the people who are going to be running the country at this point in time. They're going to leave office on February 7th, 2026. These are the people who are going. This is the person who's going to become the prime minister, and this is going the person who's going to be coordinating the presidential council. So that's all. However, relies on an external factor. The external factor being that the international community has to play its part. The international community said, okay, in response to the request that was made by Mr. Henry, maybe a year and a half ago, that we were going to deploy what they call the multinational security support mission to Haiti. It has been a year or more since that the agreement was reached, since the request was made, and at the very least about 6 months since the UN sort of put his imprimatur into the deployment of a security mission that is not UN based.
Right, because the UN forces have a very bad history in Haiti, certainly.
Yes, they do. So, but part of the problem is that the Security Council of the UN would not agree. I mean, the five veto members, and those who will veto them, the United States, Russia, China, England, and France, would not necessarily agree to a peacekeeping deployment, which would obligate them to fund the mission. So now you're looking at the situation in which if there's going to be a multinational security support mission deployed in Haiti, is going to have to rely on voluntary contributions from member states of the UN, and that's a problematic issue. In the meantime, what is really going on is that to some extent the paramilitary insurgents who have grown bigger and more and bolder in their demands for power sharing or for having a role in dictating the future of Haiti, have laid siege to the capital city of Port-au-Prince. And they've essentially trying to thwart the installation of the emerging presidential commission.
So let me ask you to delve a little more deeply into these forces. U.S. news headlines are referring to them as, Haitian gangs. I mean, there have been some, fear-mongering stories here, and they don't really give enough background to try to understand where these so-called gangs are coming from. But earlier you mentioned that it was former president now, because he resigned a month ago, Ariel Henry, who worked with these paramilitary groups to gain power. Is this a matter of the forces that he relied on turning on him and on the country as a whole?
I think it's multifaceted. I mean, I think one has to go back to 2010, when the government of Haiti essentially collapsed as a result of the devastating earthquake that happened on January 12th, 2010. At that time, up until that time, Haiti was in a course which everybody said was a very good course of peaceful improvement, progress, lack of instability, and so forth. But the earthquake was a shock to the system in Haiti. And unfortunately, the international community responded very badly to the shock. But though it was perhaps driven by very good intentions, former President Bill Clinton of the United States declared at the time that he was going to do what he did in South Asia when the tsunami hit, and he was going to rebuild, make sure that Haiti was built back better. Unfortunately, President Clinton ignored the need for capacity building of the Haitian state. So the Haitian state was completely ignored, frankly, at this at that point. And he and his wife, and unfortunately, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who were in charge of carrying an out U.S. policy in Haiti, essentially put their hopes into very quick elections. So they insisted on having elections as much as possible and as soon as possible, even though the country itself was not ready. I mean, the country itself was much more concerned about making sure that the building blocks of a viable state, a viable democracy, a viable economy were in place before elections took place. So
And the
this was
Clintons sort of handpicked Michel Martelly, right, who was the predecessor to Jovenel Moïse.
that is absolutely correct. In fact, Michel Martelly was, sort of a kind of hip, hip insofar as a former cokehead turned popular musician because of hijinks and debauchery on stage was, and actually, so Michel Martelly surrounding himself with celebrities, with film stars, with models, beautiful models, and so forth. So he was hip as far as the international community was concerned, and he had Sean Penn, to vouch for him. Unfortunately, so they put their weight behind Michel Martelly and essentially ushered him into power. Even when the first round of elections in Haiti demonstrated that he came in third and he had absolutely no place in the electoral process, but they pressured the government of Haiti at the time, to put him in second place so that he could go towards a runoff and win the vote. Michel Martelly was a complete disaster for Haiti. And in fact, because he was a disaster for Haiti, he mismanaged the economy. He put loyalists in command of various government ministries, and they and him siphoned off millions of dollars away from the Haitian treasury, millions of dollars that were being provided to Haiti for the rebuilding effort. They wasted a lot of money. They essentially took away a lot of money. And in response to, and that's what you have to know, in response to popular opposition to the policies that they were implementing, they unleashed, in addition to the police forces, paramilitary forces, which they paid off and allowed to behave in an extrajudicial manner, extralegal manner, in Haiti. So he had so basically they turned Haiti into a lawless state. I mean, Haiti had fragile institutions at the time. They turned Haiti into a lawless state. So the
And so all of this
lawlessness
can be t traced back to the meddling of the Clintons and the US State Department.
Unfortunately, absolutely. It can be traced back to the Clintons. It can be traced back to the arrogance of the international community, which dismissed Haitians' concerns about their own democracy and basically said and basically decided for Haitians what Haitians would be settling for at this stage. So they not only they so they ushered in Martelly, and when Martelly's term of office was about to be over, Martelly managed to put in or to usher in his own replacement as and his replacement at the time was Jovenel Moïse. So he replaced him by ushering in what was commonly known as a banana man, allegedly because he had a banana plantation. Nobody had ever heard of him before,
And then he was killed a few years later.
Yes, that's correct. So he was killed about 3 years later, 3 or 4 years later, because, there were so many people who were vying, to step in into the office at this state. Yeah, so
Are you concerned that American U.S. media coverage just doesn't tell much of this backstory? The corporate, especially corporate commercial mainstream news coverage, just doesn't give us this framing when we hear about what has been happening in Haiti over the last several weeks, this past month especially. You get this impression, rampaging gangs that are overrunning Haiti, migrants trying to flee, and people like Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida whipping up racist frenzy about Haitian migrants pouring into the United States. You don't get the backstory of U.S. meddling and malfeasance and involvement in Haiti, right?
That is absolutely correct. I think the TV media in particular has been guilty of running endlessly images of Haitians and the chaos in Haiti, images of Haitians being shooting at each other, images of Haitians being killed, being maimed, and so forth. So they focus on the disaster. They don't focus on the history, on the why this happened. And at the same time, they ignore the basic root causes of this disaster. But in respect to corporate media, I mean, I cannot just blame.
Yeah.
Basically say corporate media uniformly. I think we've got very good reporting from Jackie Charles at the Miami Herald. Then we've had a few good op-eds that have been published by the Washington Post, the New York Times, and Foreign Affairs magazine, and so forth. So we've had a variety of things, but these are not necessarily accessible to the overall American public. So the overwhelming picture that the American public gets about Haiti is that this is a failed state, this is a chaotic state, this is, as our former President Trump said, akin to a show, excuse the expression. Mm. I don't agree with it, but this is what the President of the United States then, a few years ago, said about Haiti. And now you've got DeSantis and others were basically saying, well, then we've got to protect ourselves from this horde of immigrants who are ready, who are going to spoil our way of life and ready to kill us, because that's all they know how to do. Whereas, in fact, and this is what get Haitians, particularly in America, upset, that the kind of contribution that the Haitians have made, in all kinds of fields in the United States, are being ignored, and Haiti is being condemned for being what it is, and so forth. Whereas the people don't know that in fact the United States could have had a better relationship with Haiti and could have listened to the Haitians, both those Haitians in Haiti as well as the Haitians in the United States, so that it could really have a much more intelligent, smart policy towards Haiti.
Tell me a little bit about the situation for people trying to flee. Is it true that there are large numbers of people trying to flee right now? I mean, of course, there has always been a trickle of refugees coming in, migrants coming in, Haitians coming in through Florida and other parts of the United States. But if you listen to Governor Ron DeSantis, he has deployed National Guardsmen to the south of his state. And whipping up this fear that there are, the hordes of migrants ready to invade the United States from Haiti. Is that really true?
No, that's not true. There are not hordes of Haitians hitting the shores of Florida and compelling Mr. DeSantis, to deploy all these troops and so forth. The reality is the following. The United States has had a very longstanding Coast Guard interdiction policy. The federal government has Coast Guard cutters patrolling the high seas just outside of Haitian waters and they readily pick up and return patients who are found on the high seas because they are deemed to have to be essentially planning to migrate, to the United States overall. So those are the kind of things that are not being discussed by the media. The second thing that is not being discussed by the media is that most Haitians today come to the United States not by boat, not by trying to break through the Coast Guard interdiction policy, but they come through the southern border because most of them have
Through
in years,
Mexico.
yeah, through Mexico. So most of them have in years earlier migrated or lured to migrate to Brazil, Chile, and other countries in Latin America. And because situation in those countries has become dire for them, they are migrating up north. So that there's a lot of Haitians today in Mexico, and Mexico is bearing the burden of housing not necessarily in a good way, but housing these migrants and refugees from Haiti. The third thing that we have to know is that in response to the pressures of Haiti, at the very least, the Biden administration has enacted an advanced parole program. It's not just for Haitians. It has to do with Venezuelans, Salvadorans, and Guatemalans. But the fact is that allows for a legal migration from Haiti for people who are being sponsored by U.S. citizen or U.S. residents and who can afford to put them up. No, so as a result of that legal migration, many people have come to the United States, a two-year program, which we started last year, and it's likely that it's going to be resolved. The fourth policy that has been enacted since 2010, first by President Obama, was what is called a temporary protected status program. That temporary protected status affords people temporary refuge from strife in their homeland because of natural disasters or political disasters. That makes the Haitians qualify for that. So it's a limited, in all cases, it's a limited number of Haitians who come to the United States legally. The number of Haitians who cross the border illegally, from Mexico is minimal compared to the number of Haitians who come legally to the shores. So obviously, when the Republicans have made a big deal about migration, and they distort the truth to suit their own policies and their own campaigns.
Right. And of course, it's an election year this year. And whenever we have an election year in the United States, anti-immigrant hysteria ratchets up in particular. What are the concerns that you're seeing among the Haitian diaspora in the United States right now as you're watching what's happening in their homeland transpire? I mean, Haiti has had a troubled history over the last decade or so, in large part, as we've discussed, because of US meddling. What are some of the conversations that you know that are happening among Haitians living here in the United States? Are they feeling helpless? Are they organizing ways to send help back home or helping their relatives to safety, etc.?
Well, I think most Haitians in the diaspora who have relatives back in Haiti and have not stopped providing support to their relatives back in Haiti. So remittances continue to be transferred
Remittances
to
meaning
Haiti.
money, basically people sending money to their relatives across the border,
Exactly, so that they can at the very least survive. Although the monies that they are sending has become a little bit less impactful because of the rate of inflation and so forth.
I
Most
see.
people are also concerned of the fact that they are currently cut off. When you get to Haiti via plane, and they're right now, well, most of the airports in Haiti, I mean, the main airport is closed because of concern about safety. Commercially online, they are not flying to Port-au-Prince, Haiti at this stage, and they're not likely to fly to Haiti until there is a resolution of with respect to the gangs and their power to intimidate and to create chaos is at our is near. So that's one thing. The second, the third thing, obviously, every Haitian that wants to be a part of the rebuilding process. They want to understand what's going on. They want to understand U.S. policy. They want to understand how they can be helpful and effective, in making sure that Haiti really finally, emerges as a country in, that is welcoming to its citizen and that does not continue to be, sort of the chaotic younger country in the Caribbean that everybody is scared of.
Right. Give out a website, Jocelyn, for the Haitian American Foundation for Democracy and any other websites you'd like to recommend?
Yes, I mean the Haitian American Foundation for Democracy's website is easy to remember. It's by it's acronym, the HA. FFD, FD, dot org. It's easy to get to. So just plug it in and you'll be sent right to the website. There's a little bit of information about the FD and what it stands for, what it does. We provide a lot of information through various social media, which includes Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, I mean X, and other media. We can be reached in many ways, and we're always ready to provide information to people.
Well, we'll post a link to the website from our site later today.
Very appreciated.
Jocelyn, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your expertise and insight into this issue.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
My guest has been Jocelyn McCalla. He is Senior Policy Advisor to the Haitian American Foundation for Democracy. Previously, he was Executive Director of the National Coalition for Haitian Rights. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents, Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.